another week of the best Sox podcast on the web. That's right, you're listening to Sox Talk on the Air. I am Jason Gage, back from a week hiatus, and with me I have two very special guests. The first one from Olawine, Iowa. I know, he claimed, he was on last show and he claimed I was from Iowa as well. I am not. My family is from there. I was born in California. But with me, Alex Ernst.
You've really led me to believe otherwise. I mean, you're a Hawkeye fan, and that's something typically only the dumbest people from Iowa, they subscribe to that nation. So, I don't know if people are going to believe you're from Iowa if you're a Hawkeye fan either way.
Dumbest person from Iowa. I mean, that's really saying something, isn't it, Alex?
You haven't had to deal with a lot of these people from Iowa yet, and yes, most of them are Hawkeye fans. They're Cub fans, too, so I'm surprised you didn't fall into that line.
What can I say? I'm a wise Hawkeye fan. And then with us, another guest. It's another person named Alex, but we're going to refer to him as Bose during the show. He's coming out from Louisville, Kentucky. He happened to be in person witnessing a great sweep. He had a broom in hand last weekend when the White Sox swept the Cincinnati Reds. It's Alex Bozich, the head columnist at SoxTalk.com, and his column is known as Bose Knows. Bose, good to have you here.
Good to have you, Jason and Alex. And yeah. I'm actually still trying to get my broom back from that security guard in Cincinnati that took it away from me.
Yeah, the Reds were hating on a White Sox team that filled the stadium. That was an awesome experience, and it was really part of the continuation of what has been a really great run. It was the start of a 9-game winning streak. It came to an end Sunday, but the way it came to end was pretty impressive. The White Sox are down 9-1 in the 8th inning. And bam, Tadahito Iguchi hits a 3-run homer with nobody out in the 8th inning. Then the 9th inning rolls around, and now all of a sudden the Sox are down 4 runs. Iguchi's up, the bases are loaded, Brad Lidge is in, and Iguchi crushes it to left center field over the fences. He knocks in 7 in the last 2 innings. They tie the game, they go into extra innings, and the White Sox lose. But it was as good of a loss as you could really have. And sure, you could maybe say they could have got the clutch hit when Pablo Azuna got on with the infield hit and then got taken out of the game with the injury. But they lost the game. Ross Glode was in right field, and he came in. He dove for the ball, just barely stayed in fair territory. He missed the ball, and a fan ended up picking it up, and they got a triple to start the inning. And it was bad news from there, and the Sox couldn't muster up any offense. But it was really an impressive comeback, and it's a sign of the Sox still playing great baseball. Obviously, we're a game and a half back, but I was going to see if you guys were as impressed with the loss as I was.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think there was going to be a loss as nice, per se, as the one we had against Cleveland earlier this year where we came back in the 9th inning and put up, 6 runs? But just to see him fight back, I mean, anybody who's familiar with Sox Talk knows the legend of the Rally Creedy, which is something Jason came up with. It just seemed like one of those magical nights like we had in 2005 where things just kind of fell into line and the stars perfectly aligned. And, you know, I'm kind of hesitant to make that comparison to last year's team, but, man, it felt special last night.
Bose, to me,
what are your feelings on this?
Over the past week, I've started to think to myself that this team is actually starting to come together and play with the passion that we saw most of last season. And last night was just another example of any game that this team plays. You're down 9-1 against a team that has a pretty solid bullpen. It's been obviously questionable against the White Sox, but you're talking about guys like, Dan Wheeler, Brad Lidge, Chad Qualls. Those are some pretty good names. And, to do that again off of, the Houston bullpen once again, it was great to see the team come back like that. The only disappointing thing for the Sox fans was they weren't able to, complete the comeback. But all in all, a great week.
And that's one thing I'd love to see. I'd love to see our numbers against relievers this year, because it just seems whenever another team's bullpen pitcher comes in, we step it up a notch. I mean, you saw it dominate us just for 6 or 7 innings, and then as soon as someone came in from that Astros bullpen, we just started hitting them hard, and it seems like that's just been a theme this year. We can get dominated by a starter, but as soon as they bring in someone, we can get to their bullpen, and that's why I like us seeing take as many pitches as we have in our at-bats. That's why I like us seeing, force 20 pitch innings out of their other starters, just because we can get into their bullpen. We can take advantage of it because we just click into a different mindset, into a different gear when we face, Brad Lidge. I still don't think he sucks. Heck, I kind of want to see him roughed up because maybe we can acquire him for cheaper, but it's just nice to see us totally change how we play, even if we're getting dominated by a starter.
Yeah, it's a sign of a winning team when you're able to get down in a game and you don't have any fear. The Sox have over 20 come from behind victories, and they are definitely one of the best teams late in games in coming back and taking the leads. And that's a good thing because when you're in the playoffs, you can't be fazed. You're going to be down at times in the playoffs. You're going to be down at times later in the season in the stretch run. And if you get fazed and you let things bother you, you're going to make things worse, and you're going to take yourself out of games that you could maybe come back and win. If you're only down one or two runs, you got to have the confidence to know that you're going to come back and win that game. And I think the White Sox, they're down four runs, and they sit there and they still think they can win the game. And they have the Thunder in the lineup. I mean, you have Jim Thome, Paul Konerko, and Jermaine Dye, who are three of the best run producers in the American League right now. And then you have Joe Creede. I mean, what can you say about Creede? The guy's still been knocking in runs all season. He's plays very good defense, even though he's had some misplays as of late. But he's still a phenomenal defensive third baseman, and he's been one of our best clutch hitters over the past couple years, even when his average wasn't near what it is right now. And it's a real positive going in. But at the same time, at the very end of the week, our offense was carrying what was some weak pitching out of our last three guys. And before we get into talking about the back end of the rotation, which I know in past shows I've said has to get more consistent if we want to continuously win and put together winning streaks like we just did. But we have some good news out of the bullpen, or what could be good news, and that's Cliff Polite had his first rehab appearance down in Charlotte. He's going to make one more rehab appearance and then is expected to join the team. And I wanted to get your guys' take. Do you guys really think, I know Polite is going to need surgery in the offseason, and he has a limited range of motion. Do you guys think he's going to be able to come back and help the team?
Well, first, before we talk about Polite, Joe Creede was just named AL Player of the Week, so just adding into what you're saying about that, it's just a different guy stepping up for us every week. But yeah, Cliff had his first rehab appearance a couple days ago. He actually started the game for the Knights. He went three innings, I think, or maybe it was just two innings. He actually got the start, and he gave up a hit and a walk, but he struck out two, and I haven't heard really any indications of whether he looked good or bad, but it was nice to see him, you know, just down there throwing strikes. And Charlie Hager actually helped relieve him, and he was strong, and the Charlotte Knights won another game. And if we can get him in the back end of that bull, it'll be something really valuable for us this season.
My take on Polite at this point, I think the expectations on him coming into the season were a little high, especially on the year he had last year. I don't really know that he can pitch better than that. That being said, I think as a sixth or seventh inning guy, if he can, you know, get back to form last year, he can be very valuable for us. The one thing, not to get off the topic of Polite, the one thing I have been encouraged by is how well David Rizky has pitched up to this point. He's only pitched in four innings since coming over. He's yet to give up a run. He's looked very good that seems like it's going to turn out to be a great trade, just giving up Javier Lopez for that guy. But the way I see the bullpen playing out the rest of the season, we may have to go out and get another arm, but I see the back end of the bullpen shaping up with Kotz and Rizky as the primary setup guys for Bobby Jenks, and then Polite maybe as the fourth option out of the pen, along with McCarthy as the, you know, as the 6-7.
And I think what can't go without notice is Matt Thornton's development. Cooper has got him to basically lengthen his stride as long as he can get it, and Thornton's throwing with confidence. He's able to throw his fastball for a strike, and his fastball is one of the best fastballs out of a left-handed pitcher in baseball in terms of velocity. And he's got a mediocre slider, but as long as he can throw his fastball for a strike and occasionally get a slider over, he's going to be effective most of the time. And he's been a really nice guy that Ozzie has shown a lot of confidence in bringing into key situations. And as Bo's mentioned, Rizky was a phenomenal pickup. It amazes me how Ken Williams is able to go get some of these guys that have been valuable relievers. I mean, David Rizky was a valuable part of the Cleveland Indians bullpen. He's got a long-term string of success at the major league level, and the only issue is whether he's going to be healthy. And he's looking like a great pickup for a team that really needed some bullpen help. And aside from the run Brandon McCarthy gave up, this bullpen has been pitching lights out as of late, with the exception of Agustin Montero, and the only key is who are we going to replace him with. And in terms of Polite, I think the one thing is he actually has pitched a second game. He's given up four hits in two and two-thirds innings, and I really have my doubts as to whether he'll be able to come back. And if he does come back, I think he's going to be in terms of limited use because I don't think he's going to be able to pitch every day. I don't think he's going to be able to go more than an inning at a time. And I don't really see him being an effective reliever. I think he's better than Montero. I was never a fan of Montero. Montero gave us a good week or two, and now he's getting shelled. But Sean Tracy, just won pitcher of the week, and Ozzie said he's willing to go back to him. And I think you may see the Sox turn to Tracy, see what he can do, see what Polite can do, obviously, when he comes back. And when if both of those things fail, they will go out and make another move for another reliever. And I think Bo's hit in the head in terms of the order of the bullpen. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Polite, and then obviously if they give Tracy a chance before trying to make a trade.
Yeah, Jason, I was going to ask you that. Would you feel more comfortable with Sean Tracy in the bullpen at this point than Cliff Polite? I mean, I realize you're going to feel anybody more comfortable in that last spot in the bullpen than Agustin Montero. That's you've always referred to him as a bum, and you've never really been a fan of him. But you do feel more confident with Tracy in the back of the pen than you do with Polite?
I'm not sure if I feel more confident with a healthy Cliff Polite, because I think healthy Cliff Polite is good. And I think Bose was once again dead on when he said the expectations for Polite entering the season were impossible to match. The season he had last year was one of the as good of a season as you could have as a setup man. And there was no way he was going to match it. It was a career year for him, and we thank him a lot for that. And he's a solid pitcher when he's healthy, but I just don't see him getting healthy. He's going to need to have a surgery, and hopefully the Sox can get something out of him next year. And whether Tracy's that guy, I really don't know, but he has his stuff. And if that doesn't work, it is the back part of the bullpen. And the front end is starting to stabilize. If Risky can stay healthy, if Kotz can continue to make strides, Jenks has been phenomenal. McCarthy obviously needs to get used more, and I'm still waiting to see Ozzie go to him a lot more. But it'll be nice to get McCarthy, and McCarthy seems to be getting a groove. And the bullpen in general is getting better, and part of that is that the starting rotation has been better. But another option we haven't talked about yet is Dustin Hermanson. He was a big pickup for the Sox last year. He hasn't pitched yet this year, but he recently there was an article talking, and he was quoted as saying he's going to be back with the team in July. And he's in extended spring training still, or some sort of extended spring training. And do you guys think he has a better chance of helping out than Polite, or should we just have really no expectation for these guys?
Absolutely, without a doubt. I would not have very much in a lot of expectations for Hermanson. I mean, the guy, the end of last season, it was obvious that he was pitching in pain. He, you know, there was optimism early on in the season, and, you know, he wasn't able to pitch. Now, you know, we keep hearing there's an article that comes out every few weeks that he's going to be back. He may not be back. He may retire. He may not retire. And at this point, you know, to expect anything out of him would be foolish by the White Sox. And, you know, if the guy can come back and be effective, sure, I want him in the bullpen. But I don't want him coming back to the major leagues unless he proves for a couple of games down in the minor leagues, wherever it may be, extended spring training, that he can, you know, pitch two or three times a week. We don't need him in the bullpen if he can, you know, pitch a game and then he has to have 6 days off because his back's killing him. That's just not realistic for a team that, you know, wants to be able to go back to the playoffs and win again.
And I think Bose just nails that on the head. I mean, right now we've got five solid guys in the bullpen. We've got Jenks, we've got Kotz, we've got McCarthy, we've got Thornton, and we've got Risky. So that gives us five solid arms right there. Are we going to go with seven if Polite and Hermanson get healthy? I don't know. But we just have to worry about that last guy in the pen. And we have Polite, and we have Hermanson, and we have Tracy. And, you know, I feel comfortable with any of those three, those first two, of course, if they're healthy. But it's not going to be a huge problem for this team if neither of those guys comes back, really. Because, like Jason says, I do think we have a guy in Tracy who is going to be a good bullpen arm. We shouldn't have any expectations of Polite and Hermanson this year. And, I mean, it's kind of sad to say because they were such big parts of what we did last year. But just to expect them to come back, especially in the roles they did last year, that's just going to be foolish.
And the nice thing is, and kind of to beat on a dead horse right here, is the fact that we have Risky now. And we're talking about the last spot on the bullpen. And the last spot on the bullpen is going to help you get into the playoffs, but come postseason time, that last spot on the bullpen isn't going to have any effect on the results of the game unless you're going 15, 16 inning games. And that's very rare. Obviously, it happened last year in the World Series, but you can't really rely on using your last reliever in a postseason game. It's really going to have no effect once the playoffs come around. And then that means if everyone else stays healthy, everyone else produces, we really don't need much out of those guys, and that's a big positive. And to stick with the theme of pitching, our starting rotation, Burley's been pretty consistent. Jose Contreras has been our ace, but he's had some flare-ups as of late, and I've personally noticed the fact that he seems to be wearing out and getting hit in the fifth or sixth innings of games where he's dominant the first four innings, and all of a sudden teams are hitting him. He's throwing a lot more strikeouts, but I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, because he can get a lot of ground ball outs when he's effective. And I don't know if other teams are making adjustments right now, and if it's just a matter of Contreras readjusting to whatever adjustments other teams are making, if other teams are kind of waiting for him to come into the plate and kind of sitting back. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to be doing that if I'm an opposing hitter, because if I'm down 0-2 and you have to hit a splitter, you got no chance, or it's forkball.
It's nice that we can call what he's having right now a downspell. He's still winning games, but there's been times where it's almost looked like flashbacks of the first half of last year, where he's tending to get into the beginning a little more. He's tending to give up a few more walks. I mean, it's nothing near as bad as he was when he was in New York or when he just came here, but it's a little worrisome at times because he's falling off. Then again, he's getting into the season, and you can expect ups and downs out of pitchers. I think it's ridiculous to expect anyone to just maintain the pitching streak that he's had right now. He's got, 16 straight wins now in the regular season. I mean, if it's something that continues, yeah, it's something to be a little worried about. Maybe he's not all there after coming back from his DL stint, but I'm going to give him a couple more starts. I'm not worried unless he starts reverting into the pitcher he was the past couple of years and not the guy we've seen the last couple months and the end of last season.
I think Hedge just hit it right on the, right on the head with this. If this is a down time for Jose Contreras, I mean, 90% of the pitchers in baseball would love to be, the pitcher that this guy is. And what he has done over the past, the second half of last season and the start this season has been nothing short of remarkable. The guy deserves to start the All-Star game. I think he's going to be fine. He may, he may just be going through a tough time. He had that injury a while back with, where he missed a couple starts. He's easing back into things. But, if this is a downtime for him, just wait until this guy starts clicking on all cylinders again. And we've got ourselves, a hell of a 1-2 punch with Contreras and Burley going into the, the stretch run of the season. I know we're going to get into talking about the bottom three of the rotation, and that is the thing, as we shift into that deserves some discussion, because Garcia, Vasquez, and Garland have been very inconsistent up to this point. And Jason, I just wanted to ask you, I know you're one of the, the big John Garland fans, around Sox Talk, and he's been pitching better as of late. Out of these three guys, what have you seen from each of them that, that encourages you that they're going to continue to get better, and what discourages you from, on all three of them?
Well, for Garcia, it's definitely his recent performances. He's been a lot better lately. He seems to be getting a little bit better command, and his breaking pitches are looking phenomenal. He had a great start against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are a good hitting ball club. So anytime you four-hit St. Louis, you got to sit there and say, hey, this guy still has it. And Freddie has been better as of late. John Garland has been better of late, sans his just most recent outing, where he kind of struggled with his control. The defense didn't exactly help him out, but at the same time, Garland got himself in that situation. And in terms of the negatives, Garcia, definitely his velocity. He doesn't rely on his fastball, but he's been throwing his fastball a little bit more to set up his breaking pitches, and it's been just enough. In Garland's case, I don't know what else to say except that he's lost his confidence. He's not throwing the ball inside enough. And when he was on his recent hot streak where he had three or four pretty solid starts, and I'm not going to call them great starts, but I'll call them solid. He had a great start against the Reds. But he's got to continue to throw the ball more 90-91 and then occasionally throw it rare back and throw 93-94 because he gets a lot more movement and a lot more sinking action when he takes a bit off his fastball. And then, obviously, he's got to be working the inside part of the plate. And in Vasquez's case, I was never a fan of the acquisition. I'd given a lot of Vasquez a lot of credit because for a long time, he had been our most consistent starter next to Jose Contreras. But as of late, he's been horrendous. His ERA is up over 5 now. And the only reason we're winning is at all with him is because we've been getting a lot of run support in his recent starts. He's given up 101 hits in 95 innings. He still gets a lot of strikeouts. If I was going to be encouraged about anything with Vasquez, it's that he has a plus arm. He has very good stuff. But at the same time, he's had great stuff a long time. And since leaving Montreal, he's never been the same pitcher, aside from his first half appearance with the Yankees. So it's just a matter. There's a reason the Yankees have given up on him. There's a reason Arizona traded him. And I tend to think that we could have been just as good of a ball club not making that trade. and we may have been better set for long-term success, but at the same time, I understand why Ken Williams made the trade. Chris Young could have been a really nice option to consider right now in center field over a guy like Brian Anderson who's coming back. But I have confidence in this last three of the rotation, but the last three of the rotation is going to be the key to consistently putting together long winning streaks that are going to get this team back in first place. If they can't do it, this team is going to be competing for the wild card and not the division.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it on the head, too. And with Javier Vasquez, I mean, I don't know how he does it. He's got to have some sort of enchanted horseshoe up his ass because he gets in a jam so many times and he manages to get out of it. And then we saw last night where he can't get out of it. And he's got the stuff, but he's just a bit of an enigma. He can't get it into his head. He can't get it done in between the ears, and he just can't finish batters off. And that's been one of my criticisms with Freddy Garcia, too. I mean, I'd love to see this guy throw more first-pitch strikes, and we saw that with Oswalt last night. Big zone for him or not, I mean, you saw how he took advantage of throwing first-pitch strikes. What we've been seeing out of Garcia this year, starting off a lot of batters 1-0, 2-1, and then he's just been nibbling around the corners of the plate. And these guys are major league hitters, and with the exception of, I don't know, maybe Brian Anderson, maybe, these guys, if they know you're going to be nibbling, they're going to be willing to take more pitches. And Freddy Garcia hasn't done anything to prove he doesn't have that sort of stature in the league where he's going to get those pitches on the corners. And with him nibbling, it just led to a lot of walks. And I know he's turned it around this last game against St. Louis. I didn't have a chance to watch it. And it's encouraging to know that he can still be what we've been deeming him as a big game pitcher. I don't know if that St. Louis game would necessarily be a big game with how they've just flat out sucked recently. But if he can turn it on, it's going to be nice to have him in the rotation. I'd say right now he's probably our third best arm in the rotation with Garland and Vasquez kind of duking it out for that fourth and fifth spot right now. But good and healthy Garcia, if he actually throws strikes, he's going to be a lot more valuable to this team right now. I mean, apparently his decision to not throw the ball as fast as he has in the past was a conscious decision where he's trying to get batters out with his breaking stuff more. But if he can get that fastball up to 93 or 94, which is what I think he's gotten it up to in the past, he's just that much of a better pitcher. And he seems to be doing it with smoke and mirrors. And I mean, if you win games, fine, but I'd like to see a little bit of the old Freddy Garcia, the guy that showed up at times last year that we could count on and wouldn't just nibble around and be hit around all the time.
The nice thing about Freddy, and I think it's something that none of us would argue with, is that the man is a big game pitcher. He stepped up in the postseason, and in general, when he faces good competition, he usually pitches to it.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree with that. It just frustrates you sometimes, though, when he goes out like teams against the Kansas Cities of the world and the Clevelands of the world, and he just gets hit around, and he just looks like a Triple-A pitcher. I mean, there's times this year where he's looked no better than Felix Diaz did last year, where he's looked no better than Danny Wright did in the past, and it's just hurting as hell because we know he can be a good pitcher. And if we do feel that we've got one of the best rotations in baseball. But to see him and Garland and Vasquez not stepping it up at times, it's just frustrating. And it's strange to say, we've just come off a 9-game winning streak, and our pitchers are still frustrating the hell out of us. And it's just kind of a weird situation to be in.
And little question for you guys on the pitching staff, and I'm not one to usually beat a dead horse or talk about prior trades and whether they were good or bad, especially when they're questionable, but the Javier Vasquez deal, I've long wondered, and I said it when they made the trade, would Brandon McCarthy been able to post a 5 ERA at this point as our fifth rotation? And the nice thing about having Brandon McCarthy, if he was our fifth starter, we'd be A, developing a guy who should get better, B, a guy who has a small contract that we hold the rights to for a long time, and C, instead of having Brandon McCarthy in the bullpen, we would have a legitimate reliever in Luis Vizcaíno, who's pitching very, very well in Arizona out of the pen. He can pitch a lot, and he would have really helped our bullpen when it was struggling early on in the season. And we would have had Chris Young. I mean, is this a trade that maybe Ken Williams shouldn't have made?
I don't know. I think chances are, I'm not sure what Orlando Hernandez's contract situation was at the end of this past year. Chances are he would have been traded and he could have been flipped into a decent reliever. I mean, I understand why you aren't maybe as high on this trade as some other people. You've always been high on Chris Young, and he finally came through this past year. He's hitting like 280 now with 11 home runs in Tucson for Arizona's AAA team. But I don't think Kenny Williams can look back on what he's done. Everything we've seen out of Vasquez in the past is he can be a Cy Young type of pitcher. It's just trying to get that stuff figured out. And I know Kenny Williams and Ozzie Guillen both have the utmost confidence in Dunbar, and just maybe Cooper hasn't been able to turn around Vasquez yet. I don't really know. I'm not in that clubhouse. If Cooper's working with Vasquez on little bits of how he's getting stuff done, either mentally or physically, whether he's trying to get him righted, but I don't think Kenny Williams can look back on this trade and say, no, I shouldn't have done this, because he had an opportunity to get a guy who would be an ace for a lot of teams around the league, and be able to get a guy like Vasquez, or at least the guy he thought he was getting in Vasquez. You've got to give up talent.
All right.
And I...
Let me just say something here. I'm going to go a different direction on this because, you know, I've never really liked this deal from the beginning, and I'm just going to call it what, you know, I think it was, and the bottom line is I think Kenny Williams panicked with the uncertainty of John Garland and Contreras, because the deal was made before either of those two guys signed a contract, and, you know, now we have Vasquez, and Jason said earlier there's a reason why the Yankees got rid of him. There's a reason why Arizona got rid of him. The guy has great stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of pitchers who have great stuff, but they don't know how to pitch. And last night was a perfect example. You've got, you know, the Sox has scratched across the run against Oswalt. We're back in the game. It's 2-1. He's got a chance to get out of the inning. It's an 0-2 count, and the guy throws a fastball right down the middle to Mike Lamb, and all of a sudden it's 4-1, and then, you know, you can just see him throw his arms in the air, and then the next batter, he walks on four pitches, and then Lance Berkman comes up and hits a home run off of him. You know, Vasquez, he can be a good pitcher, but there are limits as to, you know, how effective he can be. And I think, you know, the Chris Young thing, let me just read you a little excerpt from one of Jason's favorite publications, Baseball Prospectus, since I'm looking at it right now. And, it says, this is what it says about Chris Young. While Javier Vasquez makes a more worthwhile acquisition target than Larry Anderson, Young could wind up being the pale hose answer to the Jeff Bagwell all-time trivia question. Name a great prospect your organization burned for little or no return. And I think that pretty much sums up my idea of the trade.
Yeah, I think the biggest question when they made the trade was, did we really need another starter? And the only reason I could even see giving this trade an equal value and Arizona not winning this trade is, A, if we win the World Series and Javier Vasquez comes up big, well worth it. I don't care who we gave up. We could have given up Babe Ruth. I'd take World Series wins over anything else. But would John Garland, would Jose Contreras have re-signed if we didn't make that move? If the answer is no, then I see the logic in it. If the answer is yes, then obviously there's a lot of question marks, you know, that go around in that deal, because McCarthy is in the fifth spot, and instead of taking your fifth-row starter and putting him in the bullpen and teaching him, and pretty much, I think, stunning his growth,
right?
We could have had him in the fifth spot and would have had a legitimate reliever who's proven that he is pretty damn solid year in, year out in our bullpen. And I think we've spent enough time on this subject, and obviously we probably feel in the minority in sense, because I think we all felt pretty highly about Brandon McCarthy's ability to enter the fifth rotation. I mean, McCarthy was fantastic last year down the stretch for the White Sox. He's one of the most talented young pitchers in baseball, and I hate to see good, talented pitchers messed up with their development and thrown into the bullpen when he's not the type of guy that can pitch every day or every other day, although I would like to see the Sox use him three times a week every week, pretty much regardless, so he can get consistent work in. But let's talk a bit now about the offense, or I guess more of the defense. The good news is Brian Anderson's going to be back starting against the Pirates. Mikowiak, you know, he was admirable out there, but I think everyone got to see a few plays where Mikowiak almost fell over on just routine fly balls, and just the value of Brian Anderson in center field as our everyday starting center fielder, unless we have some other option out of house that we're going to acquire. He has to be our starting center fielder. I've drilled on it pretty much every week. I think Alex agrees. I want to see what your take is, Bose, on Brian Anderson.
I've started to come around on Anderson. You know, I'm still skeptical on the hitting, but You know, the past few games he was in there, he did, you know, show some signs that he's starting to come out of it at the plate. Let's see what he's hitting now. He's hitting 178. So that's, you know, he was hitting down in the 150s, 160s for a while. I think you know, the second half of the season, we're going to see a player that's, you know, going to be more valuable for us defensively than he hurts us offensively. So for that reason, he should definitely be the starting center fielder. There's no question that defensively right now in Major League Baseball, he's definitely one of the top five center fielders in baseball. As far as his offense goes, as long as, you know, he can keep his on-base percentage up to a decent level where it is right now, it's ahead of Juan Uribe, and he's hitting almost 45 points lower. If he can take some walks and make productive outs, I got no problem with him starting in center field.
And I think what's nice to see is Juan Uribe has came out of the slump the last, you know, 7 to 10 days. And with that, that's going to take a lot more pressure off of Brian Anderson, because you're no longer going to have that 8-9 and, for a while, even 8-9-1, because Scott Pesenik, although he's gotten a couple hits as of late, was really pretty much miserable, too, at the plate. So you had Brian Anderson getting all the pressure, all the hate, when really Juan Uribe and Scott Pesenik, two veterans that you count on, were struggling, and it basically magnified the lack of offense from that 8-9-1, which was pretty much a guaranteed 1-2-3 whenever it came up in the lineup. And it's going to be nice to see Anderson come back. Juan Uribe's confident. Scott Pesenik's pretty confident. You know, he had a grand slam, his first in his career. And to let Anderson just kind of relax. And maybe those 3 days off, the suspension could have helped him too, because it gets his mind kind of freshened up as well.
One of the commonly held thoughts around baseball is it's much harder to come up to the plate and hit if there's nobody on base, if you don't have a situation you're trying to go after, and if there isn't something you have to do while you're up the plate. If Juan Uribe can hit himself into a double, you know, I still think he's going for the fence, but if he can hit a double, that sets up the perfect situation for Brian Anderson. It's great for him if he's got to go up to the plate and he knows he needs to lay down a sacrifice bunt, or he needs to try and pull a grounder, try and hit the ball to the right side to get Uribe over to third. I mean, even have Scott Pesenik try and knock him in. Situational batting is something that oftentimes helps guys when they're in slumps. And when he had Juan Uribe in front of him, that didn't lend itself to anything going right for him at the plate. If there's a guy on first, if there's a guy on second, it takes the spotlight somewhat off of Anderson. I mean, you've seen him come through at times. He's also really struggled at times. But I think it's a much better situation for him when Juan Uribe's hitting well in front of him. And I don't think you guys would really argue with me on that point. I mean, sure, it might be a little easier if there's no one on the base paths, and he doesn't have to try and get anything done so he won't be able to fail. But trying to set him up in situations where it's hard-pressed now for him to succeed are the best thing to try and get him right in between the head, in between the ears. And, you know, I've heard listened to interviews when I was in Chicago earlier this year. Brian Anderson might be one of the most positive guys on the team. He's just a fun guy to be around. And I think it's one of the best things that this team can have, even with Jim Thomae struggling recently and Jermaine Dye struggling recently, when Juan Uribe and Brian Anderson can get it done at the bottom of the order.
All right. All good points from everyone on that. I think we all can agree that, you know, we're looking forward to, you know, seeing the continued plate with Brian Anderson, and his you know, his defense is obviously valuable. But you know, as we start to wrap up the show, we've still got, you know, a pretty big topic to get into here, and that is the controversy over the past week with our favorite columnist from the Sun-Times, Jay Mariotti. I think he's a Pulitzer Prize winner for some of the stuff he does, and our manager, Ozzie Guillen. So, what was the take of the situation for you, for both of you guys? I want to get your take on that and how everything played out.
Personally speaking, I was laughing a whole lot.
Exactly.
I mean, I think obviously Ozzie Guillen shouldn't have made the three-worded remark that he did about Jay Mariotti, but I have no problem with Ozzie Guillen slamming a columnist that's berated the team, has berated Ozzie, has done so much wrong to the Chicago White Sox over the last 6 years or however long he's been writing for the Sun-Times, and just slamming the Sox. He's not welcome in the Sox clubhouse. I mean, as Ozzy said, he's a piece of shit. And I also thought Ozzy's comments were hilarious when he kind of backtracked on the whole thing and he said, oh, I go to WNBA games. I'm going to go to a Madonna concert. I mean, just from a typical point of view, Ozzy's a funny guy. And I don't think he made any of those comments trying to hurt anyone. So, personally speaking, I wasn't offended. I really don't care all too much. I think ESPN blowed everything out of proportion. ESPN calling for his head. Jay Mariotti calling for 10-game suspensions or whatever he called it. It was all a bunch of baloney. And it's all the reason why Ozzy is quietly a genius, because he takes all the pressure off a 9-game winning streak. Alex, you had a great column, or I should say Bose, a great column talking about it and how he basically takes the questions off. No one's going to talk about Brian Anderson and his suspension. No one's talking about, you know, the recent bullpen, how it's been real hot. They're not really bringing up any questions there. No one's really talking about anything that's going bad with the Sox. At the same time, no one's necessarily talking about what's going good with the Sox, but that takes pressure off the team and allows them to go out and win 9 games in a row.
You know, then again, I wouldn't be offended if Ozzy just shut his mouth once in a while. I mean, Kenny Williams said that he feels that some reporters are trying to bait him because he knows that, because the reporters know that Ozzy will say something, and a lot of times it'll be controversial. I mean, I'm not going to say that Ozzy totally screwed up here, but he has to realize he is at fault. I mean, he was saying that it means something different in his country. And, you know, since I actually work for a newspaper and I have to deal with coaches and managers all the time, I realize how big of jackasses they can be some of the time. But he needs to realize that there's times where he needs to shut his mouth. He's been in America since, what, the early 80s? I'm pretty sure he knew what connotation that word had here. Then again, if you're someone that's interviewing Ozzy Guillen, if you've got any sort of relationship with him at all, I'm going to guess that anything that he would have said in relation to Jay Mariotti would have been fairly off the record. And I'm willing to bet, I don't remember who first broke this story, but I'm guessing it was someone who was not deeply connected with Ozzy Guillen or Kenny Williams or even anyone in the Sox organization at the time. Because as a reporter, I mean, even if something like that is said about a fellow reporter, you tend not to write stuff like that where the manager can get himself in trouble, unless you really tend to have a vendetta against Ozzy Guillen, or you're good friends with Jay Mariotti, or you really don't care. I mean, I'm not sure who, go ahead, Bose.
Good friends with Jay Mariotti, isn't that... does that person even exist?
Woody Page.
Exactly. Woody Page.
We cannot use this avenue to rag on my favorite sports commentator.
Yes, we can.
Woody Page is the man.
I used to like him, but he's just saying crap to be on TV these days. Ever since he went on First and Ten with Skip Bayless, he's been totally worthless on Around the Horn.
The funny part to me about Jay Mariotti is, and I'll just make this brief, but Mariotti claims, you know, that he covers the Sox and all this stuff, but, you know, really, if he had, you know, any testicular fortitude, as I like to call it, he would walk himself down to the White Sox dugout and come face-to-face with Ozzy Guillen. Ozzy's not going to punch him. He's not going to, you know, he might curse him a couple times or something, but just go down there and talk to the guy and get your culture, you know, yourself, and just, you know, do it like most reporters do it, which is by face-to-face talking to somebody rather than sitting up in the press box, hiding behind your laptop and, you know, writing all these BS columns. And, you know, Mariotti, that's how he makes his living. You know, he tries to be a sensationalist, but sometimes, you know, he just takes his stuff way too far, and I can understand that the White Sox organization getting irritated with the guy, and, you know, Ozzy went too far with the comment he made. He should have used another word, but, you know, really, as far as Mariotti goes, the best thing at this point is for everyone in the White Sox organization just to keep their mouth and, you know, move on, because we're above, you know, people like that guy.
Yeah, and obviously, he is a Heine Berg, as Hawk wants to say it, and as far as I'm concerned, he's a piece of shit as far as Ozzy wants to say it.
Exactly.
But
hey, can you explain to us what a Heine Bird is?
Lines. The Heine Bird, I'll do my best Hawk impression here. The Heine Bird is a bird that flies in concentric circles with its head right behind its behind the entire time. And it keeps flying and flying in circles until its head goes up its own behind, and poof, it disappears.
That was beautiful.
I try my best. So we talked about all the beauty that happened last week. During that whole time, the White Sox weren't able to really gain any ground. We're still a game and a half behind the Tigers. I think Detroit has to be sitting there going, God, we just played phenomenal baseball, and we still can't keep these guys off our backs. They've never really been able to create any sort of separation. And that's obviously the hindsight to the whole theory of, well, God, the White Sox are playing great and we can't catch the Tigers. But the White Sox are experienced. We're defending World Series champions. We've been there. We've done that. And the Tigers, at one point or another, with the White Sox staying on their backs, are going to see them and go and finally just kind of succumb to the pressure, knowing that they got to win pretty much every week, almost every game they play, especially with the way the White Sox are playing right now. And that's just not realistic. The Tigers are a very strong baseball team. The American League Central has proved itself by beating the crap out of the supposed best or second best team in the NL Central, and I'm talking about the St. Louis Cardinals, who just got destroyed by both the White Sox and Tigers. Now, there's no guarantee that if the White Sox and Tigers met in the World Series, the same would happen. But you know what? I can't judge by the Mets whether the Mets would be able to handle the teams in the American League Central, the top teams, but I can tell you the St. Louis Cardinals, they know how good that American League Central is. ESPN may tell you about Boston, New York, and Toronto, but the St. Louis Cardinals will tell you about Detroit and Chicago, the two best teams in baseball right now. I happen to think the White Sox have a little bit more talent, but there's no way to knock, there's no way to put down what the Detroit Tigers have done. And the White Sox now get to go on their task, and they play the mighty Pittsburgh Pirates and the mighty Chicago Cubs in what has to be a week where the White Sox finally take care of business against some of the bottom feeders of baseball and basically assure themselves that they're in position if Detroit hits a little skid that we can regain control of first place, and at the very worst, contain and maintain our 1.5 game, second place, whatever you want to call it.
I think Detroit is here to stay because, you know, they've got the starting pitching has been phenomenal, the bullpen's solid, the lineup, they got some, you know, very talented hitters in the lineup. Obviously, a healthy Maglio Ordóñez is, as White Sox fans know, a potent bat in the middle of the lineup. And, you know, if the White Sox make it to the playoffs, that's all I'm concerned about. If they win the wild card, if they win the division. But I'm personally kind of glad that there's another team that's, you know, sticking with us. You know, I don't want to build a – I mean, it's nice to have a 15-game lead, but, you know, it makes it more exciting to watch the games when you know that you're chasing a team or a team's right behind you. And another great thing about the Tigers being up there is maybe we won't have to see both the Red Sox and the Yankees in the playoffs this year. So, you know, let's just see how it plays out the next few weeks. But I think, you know, you're going to see that Detroit is not a team that the White Sox are just going to overtake and go away. I think they're going to be a team definitely has a chance to win 90 to 95 games and, you know, be a player in the playoffs.
And, you know, our schedule is setting up really nice again where we've got Pittsburgh, we've got the Cubs, and then we've got Baltimore. I mean, it really, who knows? That could be another 9-game winning streak right there. But Detroit has Houston, and then they play whoever their division, their rival is in the little interleague setup, and I think it's Arizona, but I'm not sure. And, you know, I said in the last show, I'd prefer everyone in our division played like Kansas City. And, you know, Kansas City, I think they won 2 straight series against NL teams, you know, proving just how strong the AL Central is. But it's I don't think it's a bad thing for baseball at all if Detroit makes it in. You know, Fox and ESPN are going to hate it if one of the Red Sox or Yankees gets left out. But I like our chances really against any other AL team in the AL playoffs, you know, with the exception of maybe one of the teams from the West. And we've fared well against Detroit. I mean, that's one of the few reasons that I have left where I don't think Detroit is necessarily the best team in the league, and that's because of their failure to get it done against the Chicago White Sox with a 1-5 record against the White Sox. But I've always liked how the White Sox have set up against the best teams, or whoever you want to call the best teams in the AL Central, because they beat the Detroit Tigers head-to-head. And I personally think they could handle either the Yankees or the Red Sox, just because the White Sox are a team that tends to step it up a notch in the when it tends to come up big when they have to play the Yankees and the Red Sox of the world. And it'd be nice if there's a divisional setup in the playoffs where the White Sox get to play the Yankees or the Red Sox, one of those East Division where I think they can handle it. And the Detroit Tigers would need to take care of business against some team from the West, because it'd really be nice if Detroit could take out one of those teams in the first round that traditionally gives us trouble in an Oakland or a Texas Rangers, and the ALCS was a White Sox-Tigers matchup, because at that point I'd feel confident with us advancing into the World Series. But, you know, that stuff's way out in the future, so it's just time to, you know, take it game by game. We just won 9 in a row, and we're right back where we started, 1.5 back of the Detroit Tigers. They're frustrated, we're frustrated, but both teams are continuing to play excellent baseball. And if the White Sox just keep doing what they're doing, They've got this easy stretch coming up. Then they've got a stretch against Boston. There's the All-Star break. They're at Yankee Stadium, and they're at the Detroit Tigers. So chances are, by the end of June, we're going to have a lot better idea of how things are going to shake out with both the White Sox, if they are staying as one of those contenders in baseball, and the Detroit Tigers. Because by the end of July, both teams will have likely made their moves, because I don't think Kenny Williams is going to wait until the end of July to make the move that he wants to make.
It's going to be interesting, and speaking of interesting, obviously the weekend series against the Cubs, it's always interesting, it's always entertaining. In past years, it had a lot more meaning to White Sox fans than it ever did to Cub fans, but with the recent success of the White Sox are still playing good this year, obviously, second or third best record in baseball, along with the Mets, and obviously the Tigers, who have the best record. And then you have to look at the whole fact that the Cubs are playing lousy, their pitchers are always hurt, and I think for the first time ever, in terms of this relatively short rivalry, the Cub fans have more to cheer for, more to worry about. This is their World Series right here, this final game against the White Sox, while we have the World Series to prepare for, in a sense, over these next few months to hopefully get into that. And I obviously think this is a sign of the White Sox gaining prominence. Their attendance is doing strong. The fan support's been phenomenal. I mean, the fans were even cheering last night. I would have been long gone when they were down 9-1. In fact, I turned the TV off and started playing cards and came back and saw they were tied 9-9 and watched the end of the game.
Typical Southern California attitude when it comes to baseball games. I'm just disgusted by you, Jason.
Hey, I think we can end this show with disgust. With disgust against me. I'm willing to take the hate because it was a great week of White Sox baseball. And there's a lot of potential for another great week. Before I close the show, I got to do some pubs. I want to thank Alex Ernst, the man last week. He replaced me. He did an admirable job. Admirable, since I don't know the English language, apparently. I think he proved that Mario Scalise is pretty damn hard to work with.
Yeah.
And maybe we need to get Bose and Ernst in here and start creating, ruffling some feathers here.
You know what? I actually think Mario was easier to work with because, as Bose knows, getting this podcast set up today was pure hell trying to work with you.
Hey,
you know, I still love you, Jason. I love you, Jason, but
it was like working with some technical support guy in India or something.
We were supposed to have started this podcast 2 hours ago, and right now we're just hitting the 48-minute mark.
You just remember, this was a sign. Had we started the podcast 2 hours ago, we wouldn't have had Bose on. And Bose was nailing things, basically making whatever he said, we agreed with most of the
show. I was beating up Jay Mariotti like a punching bag, so be thankful for that.
And I'm sure Ernst wants to know his update. His Swiss are in the fifth minute over overtime World Cup soccer here against Ukraine.
I just loved the last podcast that you were on, Jason, your little update in the U.S. versus the Czech match, just because you...
I don't want to speak of that U.S. team.
Yeah, that's my favorite one-liner of you out of all these podcasts. Yes, yes, the U.S. scores. Oh, wait, it's the Czechs. Son of a bitch. I just...
Hey.
Get over your reaction there.
But the Chicago Bulls draft is coming up this Wednesday. There's a lot of rumors. Yeah, I know, I'm cutting you guys all off because I have to use the facilities. Bulls draft Wednesday. Check out TalkBulls.com. There's a lot of rumors going on. Will Sean Marion be a Bull? There's a late rumor now that Jermaine O'Neal or Kevin Garnett could be headed to Chicago. Or will they take a guy like Tyus Thomas, LaMarcus Aldridge? Will Bargany, or however the hell you want to call his name, drop to the second spot where Paxton can take him?
If Larry Bird knows what's good for him, he will keep Jermaine O'Neal sitting right there in Indianapolis.
We will gladly send you the number 2 pick, Tyson Chandler and Big Ben Gordon, as has been rumored by Sports Illustrated.
We'll just say right now, I want to keep Jermaine O'Neal in an Indiana Pacers uniform.
And then, obviously, you have the Bears. It's been a pretty quiet offseason as of late, but, you know, training camp's getting ready to start up, so if you have any Bears news and you want to talk about it, check out TalkBears.com. And the Chicago Blackhawks just had a draft. I know, I didn't know about it until the next day, but apparently they did. They drafted some guy named Toews, a center. So if you want to talk about the Blackhawks draft, the upcoming free agency, any trades that are going on, speculation, you can very well check out TalkBeHawks.com for all your Blackhawk fix. Alex, it was great to have you both on the show. Hopefully you guys will be on again in the maybe next week or in the coming weeks, especially now that I've gotten this technical problems worked out. It was our first time doing a three-way show, so I'm assuming we'll have to work out the kinks and just making things smooth in terms of a rock and fire type segment. But it was a lot of fun. It was great having you guys on. You both added a hell of a lot of discussion. And hopefully the listeners out there, all 10 of you, or however many we have, we have a couple hundred.
It's 18.
Enjoyed the show.
18 listeners. And also, please, in the future, do not end any shows with references to us having a three-way. You know, that it's really awkward.
Yeah, and, you know, plus email any comments you might have to Jason at futuresucks.com because we'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Comments, hate mail, death threats, any of that stuff.
Yeah, just don't be calling any of
just
us any three-letter words.
Just
because...
don't call me a fairy, all right? I'm not Jay Marriott.
All right.
Thanks for being here.
All right. See you guys.
See you guys.
All right. Later, everyone. All right, good show, guys. I would stay on and chat longer, but I'm dying to go to the bathroom.
All right.
All right.
All right, so I'll talk to you guys later.
Good evening, Jason.
I'll get it up probably in a couple hours, the show.
All right.
Yeah, all right.
It's going to be a minor miracle if this show makes it up.
What's that?
It's going to be a minor miracle if this show actually...